Now, just for people listening at home, wondering where they have to vote and why they should vote, when it comes to the train, which is a big deal because it'll be hundreds of millions ultimately.
Oh, it's going to reach a billion, Mitch.
$1 billion, you think, Eileen?
A billion. And I know that sounds like an awfully big number for less than 500,000 people that live in our lovely county. But that's really what we're talking about, and it's going to come out of their pocket.
Welcome to Outside the Box with Mitch Henk. To be a part of the program, call 321-1310 or toll-free at 1-877-235-1310 or email Mitch at MitchHenk.com. Now, here's your host, Mitch Henk, on News Talk 1310 WIBA.
The big winner last night, apathy, non-participation, winning in a landslide election. Dane County alone. Turnout estimated at about 15%. Don't have the final numbers, but that means 85% of the eligible voters in this great country of ours did not vote. So you've got Kathleen Falk and Scott McDonald and other people who are trying to jam the train down our throats, claiming victory last night in the balance of power. The county board, although they really didn't, it pretty much stayed the same in terms of balance of power. You could argue that the conservative to moderate candidates picked up a net one with Ron Farrell's victory on the west side, but his predecessor being a swing vote a lot of the time. But still, this interpretation that the results last night show, and I think it was one of Falk's quotes to the media last night, that the people that have been criticizing the train and criticizing our progressive agenda for mass transit, their voices are not being heard. Well, that's true. I don't know that they're not being heard. It's just that the people who hear the voices aren't voting. But 85% of the eligible voters did not vote. So when we do get the train, and we have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on it and the servicing of it and the maintenance and the track work and everything else that goes into it. And if you're sitting there stopped at a rail crossing that has 13 stops an hour in the isthmus multiplying the backup, when that happens, you can say, well, how did this happen? And that's fine. If that's what you choose to do, it's a wonderful country. But I just like to know, is there a reason? Is there a good reason? Is there a good reason or even a semi-legitimate reason not to vote? I'd love to hear it from you. Since non-voters won overwhelmingly, apathy and non-participation being the landslide winner last night. We'll go to the phones. Patrick, News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Patrick.
Morning, Mitch. It's real simple. People didn't vote because it was convenient not to vote. Now, you can flip-flop the numbers from 15% voting to 85% voting by allowing people to vote online. If they expect us to trust our millions of dollars online by using Social Security numbers, user IDs, and passwords, they can trust that we can vote online. And for people who don't have computers, they can do a touch tone on their telephone. But you can flip those numbers overnight or over the next 3 years by allowing people to vote online because it's convenient and it's how people do business nowadays.
Well, I know, and I understand that it would be nice to vote online, but also it took me about 1 minute to vote. I mean, I went into a school, into Fox School, walked right in, signed up. It took me 30 seconds to vote, walked out. Thank you very much. I mean, if we live in a democracy, if we live in a participatory democracy, or at least a republic where we elect representatives, I mean, don't we have to do something, Patrick? I mean, are we going to just wear togas and lie around and drink lead pipe poison wine and inbreed? Are we going to strangle our mothers like Nero? Is that what it's going to come to here? I mean, we're suffering from the demise of the Romans, and they were strong for 1,000 years. We've only been around for a little over 200 years, and already we're lying around in togas drinking the lead pipe poison wine. Now we're too lazy to go to the polling place. We want to have it right in our computer. We want to stop seeing other people. I love talking to those ladies at the polling place. You know, have we lost our humanity completely? Thank you very much, Patrick. Let's go next. To Ryan. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Ryan.
Hey, good morning, Mitch. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. Thanks for having my call.
Sure.
Hey, just want to talk to you about a few things briefly here.
Yeah.
I worked on Adrian Augustine's campaign.
Oh, well, good for you. He lost in his Middleton race against entrenched incumbent Mark Opitz.
Correct. And believe it or not, this is the first time in my life I've done anything political, and I'm very, very proud.
I actually saw him last night at Babe's last night. He's a great guy.
Yeah, he is. He's a great guy, a lot of good ideas. And basically, I just want to tell you and your viewers that the average person, obviously 85% don't vote. Yeah. The average person has no concept how much work goes into this campaign.
Oh, and that's true. Very
myself,
true.
Myself, personally, heartbroken that only 15% of the people vote. And just want to tell you and your viewers that, my God, if you're going to do anything, the listeners, yeah,
that's
viewers
okay.
would be TV.
Well, someday. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. That they just got to wake up and smell the coffee and realize that that vote is so powerful. And just kind of need to bring back that that feeling.
Well,
that,
and you're quite right. You're quite right to point out, we should say, Mark Opitz is the winner there, about 1,300 votes. I think Adrian Augustine had over 600 votes,
right.
But he's starting from ground zero.
Yes,
Middleton,
exactly.
By the way, is more... more to the left than one would think.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you're right. You have to work so hard and work so many hours. I mean, 8-10-hour days. And to think that somebody else can't spend, you know, a minute voting.
Exactly. And when you said it took you a minute to vote, I mean, I had more time to talk to the volunteers and say thank you than it actually took to vote. It was just amazing. In and out. I mean, it couldn't have been better. Couldn't have been easier. So.
It is the height of decadence, in my view. Thank you. Mike, hi. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Mitch.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm elated, as a matter of fact, because, of course, out in my neighborhood, where there's a higher percentage of realistic people, if you look at the District 28 numbers...
Supervisor Schlicht?
2,000 people, Mitch, versus 1,000 plus for his opponent,
mm-hmm.
and that was over train issues, amongst other things. In fact, she had the endorsement on her flyer, the opponent of Falk and Scott McDonald. So, you know, they didn't exactly win out here, did they? Because he pretty much wiped the floor with her on that vote. And that's because everyone out here knows darn well that we're not going to be commuting to work in a train, since it would be
it resonated out there, and maybe because of you, Mike, causing all that trouble out there. You know, you should take credit for it.
No, I'm not taking any credit for it at all. But I'm just pointing out, though, that this district still contains a bunch of people who pretty much treasure every dollar they earn, and we're all
frugal. That's more of a kind of a New Hampshire type mentality,
well,
out there, right?
You know, it's a gritty little
tough, rugged individualism, self-reliance.
We survived this winter, you know, and none of us could imagine waiting at a train or bus stop, you know.
I can see that. Yeah, that's a cultural dynamic out there.
And for us, growth is an economic necessity to some extent, you know.
Sure.
And lastly, I looked at the vote totals scrolling across the TV, and by the way, just as an aside, Adrian Augustine's vote total on the TV scroll was Mark Opitz. Adrian Augustine got the win with 100% of the vote, and Opitz's total is zero. So the television still hasn't corrected that as of 10 minutes ago.
Well, you know, those wacky TV people.
Yeah, well, what that shows you, you know, is that not only is there apathy in the populace, but there just might be a little apathy in the newsroom, too.
I'm reaching for my lead pipe poison wine as we speak.
Thank
you, Mike. Where's my toga? We'll come back. It reminds me of that Bill Murray scene in Saturday Night Live where they were, well, just say it was kind of a disgusting scene. Some of you will know. We'll come back and talk more. Can somebody give me a good reason why you shouldn't vote? Haven't heard one yet. News Talk 1310 WIBA. All right, I'm still trying to find somebody to tell me there's a good reason not to vote. I mean, you can tell me that it won't do any good, but I'm here to tell you that you are wrong. Especially when 85% don't vote. I mean, that magnifies those who do. I mean, it's just an amazing thing. Sympathies to John Brixey out there in Mount Horeb. losing to Pat Downing. That's an area where progressives are really motivated. You've got kind of a granola-crunching crowd out there, a lot of ponytailers. And they, you know, they meet like every month. They have little meetings like for 2 years. You know, who's going to handle the mailings? Who's going to handle the doors? Who's going to do it? So, I mean, it's just a constant campaign for people in the progressive Dane community. And give them credit. They work hard. But when you have 85% of the people not voting, you don't. It's like scoring a game in the 50s in basketball and score a game in the 40s. If you hold your opponent to under 50, you know, you don't have to score as many points to win the game. If you try to beat them in the 80s, you better have a lot of talent. And that's what happens. I mean, it's so easy to win when 85% don't participate. Jim.
Yes, Mitch.
Yes, News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning.
Good morning. I've become exceedingly dissatisfied with voting, largely because of the amount of money WMC and WEAC and places like that spend on it. It really seems like they can buy whatever they want in terms of forming a public opinion and getting the result they need.
Well, WMC wasn't really involved, nor was WEAC, I think, in shaping these county board races.
No, but as far as major races in the state.
Well, these races, to me, are more important because it decides whether we're going to have a train or a bypass or gridlock when we're going to work, whether communities can grow and have jobs, and whether we have enough law enforcement. I would think that they're more important.
Well, for me personally, there were no contested races locally.
You didn't have any contested races,
not,
huh?
On the Madison School Board, not for our county board, so there was nothing to vote for except for the statewide races.
I see. Well, it is pretty
sleazy. I would be more motivated to vote if there were some contested races.
I understand what you're saying. All right, well, thanks, Jim. Yep. And there's a lot of slime in these campaign ads, but I hope people are smart enough to sift through it. Hey, Dave Glomp on line three, losing candidate last night, Matt Veldren, on the southwest side Meadowood Orchard Ridge area. Good morning, Dave. Congratulations on a spirited race.
Well, thank you very much, Mitch. And I just want to say a big thank you to the over 800 people who voted for me yesterday. Don't be disheartened because I'm not going away. I'm going to be back. And I can tell you that I'm going to keep the issues that I feel are important to the people of Madison, to the people of the 7th District. And I just want to thank everybody that did vote. And the reason that people didn't vote, I think, is we haven't gotten the impact of an RTA yet. We haven't gotten the impact of ankle bracelets yet. I think as time goes by, the positions that I took will be vindicated, and there's time.
Absolutely. You know, Dave, you're a classy guy in defeat. You've been honorable and eloquent in this campaign. We will hear more from you. You're quite right. So buck up, and we'll see you in a couple of years out there running again.
Yeah, you'll hear from me between now and then as well, Mitch.
Well, I'm
so
sure we will.
Thanks so much for all of the positive messages you've sent on behalf of myself and some of the other candidates who didn't make it and those that did. So thanks much.
Thank you, Dave. What a great guy. Paul, hi. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, Mitch. Good show as always.
Thank you, Paul.
There's a four-letter word why people don't vote.
It's called
L-A-Z-Y. I'm a veteran, and we risked our lives, and we fought for this country, and people have the right to vote because that's what we went to war for. That's what we protect this country's rights. And I'm ashamed of people that don't vote. It's just terrible that we give them this right. We have a wonderful country, and they should vote because that's what they have the right to do, and they're just plain lazy, and they can make a difference. You can speak your mind, and you can get out there and vote for somebody. That's why Regressive Dane wins all the time. They get their people out and they win. We got 100% of people to get out. We're not getting them. So,
Paul, thank you for your service, and I couldn't agree more.
Well, thank you, Mitch. You always have a good show. I listen to you every day.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. How about that? Bob, News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Bob.
Yeah, how are you doing, Mitch?
I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
Well, okay. I just wanted to call you. I voted.
Good for you.
But I was disappointed. If I could vote for or against a train or a trolley, I'd love to. There was no opportunity.
So you had no contested race?
No. And I only, I could vote either for Supreme Court candidates and the Frankenstein.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
And that was all I could vote for.
That's about it, huh?
But why didn't they have something in there about this train?
Well, unfortunately, the county board races themselves will determine that. But you didn't have a contested race, unfortunately. But
right.
What part of, who was your incumbent then?
It's Suslick.
Okay. Well, that's the way it is. I mean, it's going to take people to run for office to be more interested. I mean, the Madison School Board, same thing. I mean, two seats and both unopposed. Actually, we'll hear from Marjorie Passman after 9 o'clock.
I just think that, the amount of effort that goes into putting on an election and the people that volunteer and...
We may have to get you to run next time.
What?
Bob, would you consider running? We got to get you maybe to think about it.
Yeah.
We'll work on you.
I got a business to run.
Okay. Well, all right.
Okay.
But at least we can get you on the ballot, and you'd have golfers vote for you at least. Thanks, Bob. Good point. Bill, News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Bill.
Well, Mitch, I think you underestimate the suppression effect of the sleaziness of this campaign. I think it tired a lot of people out, and they just said,
"Yeah."
And hey,
they're playing good defense.
I'm a political activist.
Why try to drive in and get a shot in the post? Why don't we just give up holding the ball for 1 second?
I'm a political activist, and those ads were making me sick and tired.
Well, you got to. I'd say you got to get tougher, Bill.
I'm thinking the average person, and the fact that there weren't many contested races. People go, it's only for this and only for that. Even if there's only one issue, it's still a vote.
Still important, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, and, okay. but I do think that there is that weighing effect of the...
Fatigue of the ads. Okay, Bill, I mean, again, another excuse. Jerry, News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Jerry. Last word on this.
Yeah, I just real quick, I echo the sentiments that Bet called. If you don't get out and vote, shame on you. We had 100% turnout in our household.
And, how many people are in your household, Jenny?
Two.
Okay. Is that your lady friend, or is that...
No. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And it took us about 48 seconds to vote. And
I'm glad you added that last part, but go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, and I just real quick, that Frankenstein veto amendment, how does that work? How does that get on the ballot in the first place?
Well, it's a constitutional amendment.
It goes
through two sessions of the legislature, and it goes to the voters for a referendum.
Okay.
So there you have it.
Okay, thanks, Mitch. You do a great job.
Thank you, Jerry. Yeah, and I don't even want any compliments, and I'm not going to call everybody a great American if they call me like Sean Hannity, because you may not be a great American, although I think Jerry is. We've got Marjorie Passman. You're going to love her. Even if you don't agree with her on politics, you're going to love her personality. She should be a comedian. All ahead. Madison School Board, News Talk 1310 WIBA. Hey, we're going to come back and talk to Marjorie Passman, who actually was one of the unopposed school board candidates from New York. Interesting sense of humor, and we'll talk about some of the challenges with dropout rates and poor performance and all those things ahead. We're also going to talk, we're going to hear from John McCain and David Letterman. This is hilarious from last night. News Talk 1310 WIBA.
The views expressed on the following program are not necessarily the views of WIBA, its management, sponsors, or staff. Previously on Outside the Box.
We went to Ryan. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Ryan.
I worked on Adrian Augustine's campaign.
Oh, well, good for you. He lost in his Middleton race against entrenched incumbent Mark Opitz.
Correct. And believe it or not, this was the first time in my life I've done anything political, and I'm very, very proud. And basically, I just want to tell you and your viewers that the average person, obviously 85% don't vote. Yeah. The average person has no concept how much work goes into this campaign.
Oh, and that's true. Very
true. Myself, personally, heartbroken that only 15% of the people vote. And just want to tell you and your viewers that, my God.
Welcome to Outside the Box with Mitch Henk. To be a part of the program, call 321-1310 or toll-free at 1-877-235-1310 or email Mitch at MitchHank.com. Now, here's your host, Mitch Hank on News Talk 1310 WIBA.
Marjorie Passman, if you're out there, call back. The button got stuck, my little hold button on the phone panel, and I hit hold, but then it didn't take. So you were lost. But I trust you will give us a call right back. That's Marjorie Passman, who is one of the two unopposed members of the school board candidates who won in Madison, determining the future of our schools and taxes and all of that. At student performance, he's also one of the funniest candidates we've ever come in contact with. While we're waiting for Marge to reconnect, Letterman last night, John McCain going on there. This is the perfect segue into the Marge Passman interview, by the way. McCain showing he had a sense of humor, going at it with Letterman at the top 10 list for each of the individuals last night on the Letterman show. Let's listen in.
You know who I like is that John McCain. Do you folks like John McCain? He looks like the guy at the hardware store who makes the keys. He looks like the guy who can't stop talking about how well his tomatoes are doing. There, that. He looks like the guy who goes into town for turpentine. He looks like the guy who's always got wiry hair growing out of new places. He looks like the guy who points out the spots they missed at the car wash. Right over there. How you doing? Nice to see you. Good to have you here.
Hey, Letterman.
Hi, how are you doing?
You think that stuff's pretty funny, don't you?
Yeah, well.
Well, you look like a guy whose laptop would be seized by the authorities.
What?
You look like a guy caught smuggling reptiles in his pants.
I'm not gonna if you haven't tried it.
You look like the guy who the neighbors later say he mostly kept to himself. You look like the night manager of a creepy motel.
Well, that's what I need.
And you look like the guy who enjoys getting into a hot tub and watching his swim trunks inflate.
Maybe a little too funny.
All right, that was hilarious stuff last night. McCain mixing it up, good writing. We're going to take a break. Marjorie Passman, we're going to get you on the phone because I didn't hang up on you. You're probably yelling. You're probably berating me in your home at this point. We will reconnect, but we'll take a break, Brent, and reconnect with Marjorie, who's the funniest candidate who won last night. News Talk 1310 WIBA.
For complete update of the day's news, check in 2, 3, 4 times a day. This is Madison's news, weather, and traffic station. Now, Outside the Box continues on News Talk 1310 WIBA.
All right, we're gonna change a little bit here until we get Marjorie back on the line, because Marjorie Passman, who's one of the two Madison School Board candidates unopposed, who won last night. Marjorie was in the New York public schools for a while, and I'm going to ask her about the dropout rate in New York at about 40%. We have about a 95% or nearly that graduation rate in Madison, but she claims it's disproportionately affecting disadvantaged children. We'll get to that in a moment. But in the meantime, you heard McCain. By the way, I called Marjorie back after losing her, and now it's busy. So somebody, it's live radio at its best. All right, I'm just thinking about this on the way in. McCain, who was very funny. McCain is funny, I think. He's got that kind of almost roguish spirit. You know, he's kind of contrarian. He did admit yesterday, going back to his home school area in Virginia, he was kind of a kid with a chip on his shoulder when he went to school in the early 50s. He does have that temper. He does like to fight and take on the establishment, doesn't mind swimming upstream or making a movement conservatives angry on immigration, that kind of thing. McCain does have that quality. But he also has a sense of humor. This could be Margie. And I'll set this up for after that interview. And that is the fun. Can you give me the funniest president or funniest presidential candidate we've ever had? Because we haven't had a lot of them, actually. We're going to get to that at 9:30. But first, let's bring Marjorie Passman in here. Marjorie, I swear I didn't cut you off. It was like Rosemary Woods with the 17 minutes of silence.
No, you cut me off.
I did not cut you off.
I just had this great conversation with Hillary, and she says this is how women are treated in politics.
Because of misogynist talk show hosts.
See?
We have no sensitivity.
We women know. We know.
Thousands of years of bondage. But overcome by you and your race. Actually, I think a lot of respect shown by the voters because nobody voted ran against you.
Yes, so, I thought that was hopefully respect.
I thought that was deference, certainly, on the part of the public.
Well, it was either that or fear of actually having the job themselves. I don't know.
Marjorie Passman, I think you're by far the funniest school board member because I've talked to the others.
I don't know. I think they're a pretty funny group.
And it depends on the eyes of the beholder, but I did, Ed Hughes, I hope it's the same Ed Hughes that I work with the Department of Justice.
Yes, you did. It is the same.
Okay. Ed, yes. A fine man, very quiet, but very nice guy.
Very nice, very intelligent. I really look forward to working with him. He and I have sort of spent a lot of time together because we're both going through this orientation period downtown. And so we get to meet with all the different department heads and talk about the major issues, so we're all ready to go.
Well, now, you, last time we talked, I kind of billed you because you ran once before, didn't make it, but I thought you'd be back.
Yeah.
And kind of liberal, progressive, but an open mind, is that fair to say?
Well, thank you, Mitch, an open mind. I like that.
Well, yes. You seemed a little more open than some of the others who were
entrenched. Yeah, no, I know.
Whose hands are connected to the union donation as it's being made. But you seem a little more.
No,
I mean, you seem a little more independent. But we'll see what happens.
I think I am. You know, I care about kids. I think that's the bottom line.
Well, let me ask you this, because it was a big story in the USA Today, and you were in New York at one point, right?
Yeah,
the New York
yeah.
public schools, and actually a friend of mine who was in private schools in New York said it was akin to child abuse when he lived there to send a child to public school. It was rather.
You see, it was just the opposite with my husband and I. It was sort of the golden age of New York City schools, and we were taken care of and taught brilliantly. There was no pretense of love or humaneness, but I got a very, very good education, and so did my husband.
Well, you said a lot right there, Marjorie. No pretense of love or humaneness, so people actually were tough and expected you to perform when you went to school?
Absolutely.
So that changed, it sounds
like. But it's also, you know, our parents. It didn't matter what happened to school. In school, they said, go back tomorrow and learn, and that's it. It's over.
Had to do your homework and no excuses. And
no, the only way out of the Bronx was through education.
Well, or baseball, but...
that didn't work for my husband or me. Although I was on the boys' baseball team for a long time.
Oh, were you really?
Yes, I was.
Did you do okay?
I was terrific.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, but it wasn't ladylike.
Well, I understand.
Yeah, but in those days, ladies
all those
didn't
stereotypes,
play sports.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now, let me ask you this, though, because it sounds like a lot has changed. I mean, in fact, the people that were talking about those numbers yesterday with dropout rates in Detroit, I mean, it's like 70% or more.
Yes.
And New York, it's 60%. So we have youths walking around without any skills and
getting into
all kinds of trouble. So it sounds like parental involvement, which is hard for a lot of liberals to even admit that parents have a role to play in the education of their children, but you don't seem to have that problem.
There's so many factors that go into the success of a child in education. Certainly the parents. They're the portals of education for their children. And it's the schools, but it's also the community. You know, everybody has to engage this child and support that child from the first day they walk through that door. And if they feel important, if they feel somebody's there for them, it's amazing what we can do with them.
Okay, so what has fundamentally changed since the days when you and your husband were going to school, getting a great education in New York City?
I think the numbers of overwhelming economically disadvantaged children, I think this has kind of overwhelmed our inner city schools. And let's be honest, a child who does not have a home, that doesn't have adequate housing, adequate health care, who lives in fear of their lives or in some unsafe world in some way is not going to be able to come to school and learn.
So it was. So we didn't have that kind of problem, and that we didn't have poverty and inner city crime and gangs in the 60s?
No, they were just beginning in the 60s. They were just beginning. New York City was pretty much of a middle class city.
I always think of the Sharks and the Jets and
oh yeah,
West
the famous
Story.
Sharks and Jets. You bet. Yeah, the gangs were just beginning when I was in I think high school. And,
well,
and taking over.
We also, you know, we've had a breakdown too in terms of fathers, you know, at home. I mean, Daniel Patrick Moynihan wrote that essay in 1965 mm-hmm. about fatherless families and mm-hmm. the impact. Mm-hmm. And he was attacked at the time for being too insensitive.
No, and actually, he's the one that opened the book on this publicly.
Yeah.
No, this is a community. It has to be a community effort. It has to be the churches. I would like to see the churches more involved with our students. This is the connection they have when they leave our building.
Right.
I know what goes on in our schools. I've been in all the schools. I've taught in all these schools. And you walk into almost any building in this city, and you see children engaged. It's what happens when they leave.
Home is the worst place in some cases. Sadly.
In some cases, it absolutely is.
Yeah. And what we're talking about here, Marjorie, we're going beyond money. We're going beyond fiscal issues here. You know, we're talking about culture. We're talking about parents. We're talking about attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And although Madison is doing better, obviously, than New York or Detroit, there are some who have bought into this premise that it doesn't do any good to study because they're not going to have a chance for whatever reason.
That's what we have to break. That's what we have to stop.
And Milt McPike fought the great fight.
Wasn't he one of my heroes
who just passed away. But, I mean, he really made great inroads in cutting back on truancy and dropout.
Absolutely. If we had 100 Milt McPikes, why not go for 500 Milt McPikes while we're at it?
Well, I like that attitude. But what happens is you also have parents, and I've had teachers call me and say that this one teacher actually went to Allied Drive in one instance and couldn't get a parent to come to a conference. Mm-hmm. And we've seen all kinds of statistics with children whose parents don't go to conferences, how they don't do well.
Mm-hmm.
In society, it's an amazing link to that, just that one little fact. And she'd go to the person's home. She says the music was so loud, they wouldn't answer the door. She pounded on the door. I mean, you do have to have some parents involved, and some liberals just won't go there on that. You know, they're going to say, well, that's the victim. Don't blame the victim. You know, and I think a lot of Americans have had it with that, Marjorie. They don't want to hear any more about the victims. Not opening the door to talk to a teacher who's driving her own car to talk about their kid.
Let's just think. If we had engaged that mother in the schools, if we had done our job, if the community had done their job, that mother would be answering the door. And I don't think in all the years I've taught in Madison that I have not met a parent that wanted something better for their child.
Well, and I'm not going to put down teachers. I'm the son of a
teacher. That has nothing to do with teachers. I'm talking about parents. Parents.
Yeah, well, my mother had a lot of parents she couldn't stand. She had parents who were idiots and didn't come to conferences and who abused their children or neglected them in severe ways. And, maybe you should have lunch. You'd have a lot.
I would like that conversation.
You'd have a lot of stories.
Kids
who stole money out of her purse.
I've had that, too.
Kids she would take bowling on the weekends because the parent, or if there was one, wouldn't do anything with that kid. So, as Milt McPike would say... kids come to school with baggage, some more severe baggage than others.
That's right.
So we sit back, those of us who are lucky enough to have parents, and then we blame the school and blame the teacher when the kid doesn't do well.
Yeah, that is what's happening, Mitch. That is what's happening.
So you said, you know, it takes all this effort, but, I mean, if the kid is, destructive or not performing, what's the answer?
The school cannot rule out any child. Any child that comes to that door... We have to commit ourselves to teach, irregardless of what goes on at home, irregardless of his life. We have to say to that child, his or her child, this child, that your life in this school will be safe, and we will help you in anything, in any way you need. We will teach you, and you will learn. We have to do that. We have to do that.
All
That's
right.
our job. And now we have to turn elsewhere and say, all right, when this child leaves my classroom, is he going to go to a community center? Is he going to be well taken care of after that? Is he going to have food on his table? But that's where the community comes in. That's where the churches come in. That's where everything else comes in.
Well, I have to say, the first time I met Milt McPike, he was leading a youth outside the door with his hand on the scruff of his neck and led him to a squad car.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Milt McPike can do this.
There is an idea out there that public school teachers haven't been really backed or supported with being able to discipline students. Obviously, you know, there's obviously a line of conduct that can't be crossed, but that we've been almost too enabling and permissive to, you know, mediocre performance and bad behavior.
I know there's
unfair
a lot of that
stereotype
out there. But then again, you see examples of Lincoln Elementary School, Cherokee Middle School. You know, there are schools out there that are doing what they should be doing for every child. And obviously the leadership in those schools says, this is what we're here for, we're going to do it for you. You know, when Muriel Sims was the principal at Lincoln, I could see her crossing the field behind Lincoln going to get a parent or bringing a child home. And that's the kind of stuff we've seen in Madison, and this is what's needed. And there's no doubt, Mitch, when you've got a principal who backs you and who believes in a very firm policy of discipline, it's much easier. Of course,
makes a big difference.
It does. It absolutely does, and I'm not going to deny that.
You sound like you're very happy with pretty much all the schools. I mean, there's a debate nationally, and you know we should have more rigorous pressure to succeed and public school choice. Forget about private school choice for a moment, and that if schools don't perform, then they should pay the price by either closing or having students go elsewhere.
Well, how in this day and age are we going to close, you know, an $8 million school?
Well,
where do we get the justification?
I just threw it out there as a straw man.
Yeah, okay.
The argument is that, which you immediately blew away, but I have a friend of mine who talks about in Belgium how there's just pretty much public, there's like a race to get the money, and then, you know, if there is a school somewhere that doesn't succeed, they pretty much go away at some point. And then we honor and we back the schools that do well.
The problem is in the United States that we have one of the most heterogeneous nations in the history of the world. And we're all trying to get along here somehow in some way. And then they start comparing us to the countries of Japan or Hong Kong. They love to compare, you know, United States cities to Hong Kong or to Finland or Sweden. Can you get any more homogeneous than those places? No. This is a country where people came to get away from some horrible evil. And they come here, and it's hard to adjust. It's hard to do anything. I'm a second-generation American only. I know what my grandparents had to do to get over here, what they had to confront when they got here. And we were the first country on Earth to come up with universal public education, Mitch. Well, and I certainly don't want to be on the school board that's going to dismantle that.
Here's the criticism, though. For instance, in New York, this was on a John Stossel report, that teachers who molest children, it takes a while to fire them, so they have to be retained and put in these rubber rooms where they can just read the paper. Now, that's an extreme example.
Go back. Tell me that one. You're putting teachers in the rubber room? Or what?
Well, they're like holding areas because it takes so long to fire a teacher in New York that the unions have succeeded in some, you know, provisions that even make it harder to see parents or talk to parents about a kid, or even teachers that are abusive or violating of the children are held in these rubber rooms. That doesn't happen here. I'm not trying to compare. But there's a criticism generally that that changes and attempts at real reform and dramatic changes in the way we educate are often up against an education establishment that is entrenched to stop any kind of dramatic change.
Well, there's always that. But, you know, the more things change in education, the more they seem to stay the same. I firmly believe that it always comes down to the teacher-student relationship. It's very Socratic, very Socratic. Strengthen that teacher, strengthen that classroom, and you will strengthen the student's education.
We'll talk again. This is important stuff, Marjorie.
All right.
You've got wit, which we don't often see in public life.
Well, it'll help, I think, coming up.
I hope so. Okay. We're going to talk about wit. Our funniest presidents and candidates for president in your lifetime. Thanks, Marjorie.
We'll All right. Thank you very much.
News Talk 1310 WIBA.
Madison's best, most complete newscast. Hear it at the top and bottom of every hour. Now more Outside the Box with Mitch Hank on News Talk 1310 WIBA.
Okay, this is a tough one because we heard McCain. In fact, we can re-rack that if you want. That was so funny. I thought it was good. We'll get the Letterman appearance last night. John McCain was on David Letterman. And, you know, these politicians go on the talk shows and they try to be funny. They're just not funny. I saw Fred Thompson earlier when he announced his candidacy September on Tonight Show. Tried to tell a couple of jokes. It just didn't work. Mitt Romney, it just didn't happen for Mitt. Al Gore went on his little, you know, funny man tour, and I never really bought into that either. Interviewed him. He's stiff as a board. McCain last night, I think, did pretty well. He had that, he does have that rogue quality, which, of course, drives a lot of people nuts. But let's play it again. This is Letterman and John McCain last night.
You know who I like is that John McCain. Do you folks like John McCain? He looks like the guy at the hardware store who makes the keys. He looks like the guy who can't stop talking about how well his tomatoes are doing. There, that. He looks like the guy who goes into town for turpentine. He looks like the guy who's always got wiry hair growing out of new places. He looks like the guy who points out the spots they missed at the car wash. Right over there. How you doing? Nice to see you. Good to have you here.
Hey, Letterman.
Hi, how are you doing?
You think that stuff's pretty funny, don't you?
Yeah, well.
Well, you look like a guy whose laptop would be seized by the authorities.
What?
You look like a guy caught smuggling reptiles in his pants.
I'm not gonna have him try it.
You look like the guy who the neighbors later say he mostly kept to himself. You look like the night manager of a creepy motel.
Well, that's what I need.
And you look like the guy who enjoys getting into a hot tub and watching his swim trunks inflate.
There you go. It could be the next president of the United States, John McCain, appearing on David Letterman. So, in your lifetime... Why? Because you don't remember how funny John Quincy Adams might have been, or John Adams. You can only imagine. But in your lifetime, give me the funniest presidential candidate or funniest president that you can remember. And let me know who it is and why. 321-1310 outside the Medicine Area, 877-235-1310. Log on now, WIB.com. It's keyword Mitch. Don't forget about the Home Health United golf outing coming up May 13th. More on that as we progress. The funniest presidential candidate or funniest president in your lifetime? I have to say, for me, it's not even a question. Bob Dole. Bob Dole to me would make me laugh. I mean, laugh from the stomach. Witty. Deadpan. He had that sarcastic humor. The problem is Bob Dole was perceived when he ran as this curmudgeon-y, cranky old man, but he was hilarious. And, you know, he had that great wit. He said, you know, there are a lot of good things about Steve Forbes. I just haven't thought of him yet. And he would quote, you know, Churchill and how he was confronted by Lady Astor, who said, Mr. Prime Minister, you're drunk. And, you know, if you were my husband, I would put poison in that drink. And Churchill said, if I were your husband, I would drink it. But, I mean, all this kind of stuff. His wife worked for the American Red Cross. I saw him at a fundraiser. He said, well, you know, I want your money, and my wife wants your blood and your money. And, I mean, he would just go on and on. The guy was just witty and and just, you know, he went on Saturday Night Live and appeared with Dan Aykroyd, who imitated him. You know it, I know it, the American people know it. And with that little left hand thing, because he was tragically injured in the war, couldn't use his right hand. But I think there's a case where a lot of people didn't know just how funny Bob Dole is, you know, because he was running for president, and I guess he didn't tell a lot of jokes when he was running. I mean, when, you know, he ran for president, you know, one of the first times, and he goes, "Well, I finished seventh. Can you finish seventh?" I mean, he just would always do self-deprecating humor. So for me, it's Bob Dole, but he didn't seem to captivate the nation with that sense of humor, or really do a, give a compelling reason why he should be the president. So it isn't always going to work for you. Now, McCain is able to have self-deprecating humor. He's able to. Clinton was not funny. Clinton, to me, Clinton was never funny. You know, when you're that much of a narcissist, where you are really only capable of truly caring about yourself, you're not funny. JFK was witty. There's no question about JFK being witty. You know, rib splitting funny? No, I don't think so. But let's go to the phones. Funniest president or presidential candidate, Jeff. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Mitch.
Hi.
I was actually gonna say Bob Dole too. And one of the funniest ones that I heard was, you remember when Quayle and what's his name got into "I knew Jack Kennedy"?
Yeah.
I like when
Lloyd Benson of Texas.
Right.
Yes.
Bob Dole goes, "I knew Abraham Lincoln."
he's just hilarious.
Oh, he was just hilarious, and I wish that he would have used that humor at the beginning of his campaign instead of at the end.
Well, he went on Letterman, what, about a week or two after the election, and it just was just killed.
That's where I first saw him being funny.
Seen it for years, but he didn't really show it in the
campaign.
No,
I mean in the campaign.
Yeah.
I've seen it before that, but not in the campaign.
Yeah, and it was just too bad. I mean, he was, well, even in the debates against Clinton, he would talk about how, you know, they're talking about affirmative action. And he said, "Well, I, as a disabled American, I'd like to be able to start, 20 points ahead? Would that be fair, Governor?"
I mean, yeah. But as for presidents, I would go with Reagan. I can't think of any president that had more humor than he did just to knock down his enemies.
He did have a great, he did have a good wit. He had that Irish,
quick one-liners.
Stereotypical. Well, maybe he was messing around on the radio, and he goes, "We begin the bombing in 5 minutes.
Yes.
Bombing in 5 minutes, which I thought was kind of funny, but I guess he got in trouble for that.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Wouldn't call him, you know, like laugh from the stomach funny, Reagan. I don't think he was as funny as Bob Dole, but he had a good wit. He and Kennedy both had good wits. Nixon, no sense of humor that I could ever tell existed. I mean, maybe I'm being unfair here. But, you know, again, I watched Nixon as a child, but I don't recall him ever at any point being funny. I mean, people made fun of him. I mean, he was funny in terms of a caricature, the way he talked and looked and walked and all of that. I'm Eiffel America. We can't stand Pat. I'm not a crook. I don't know what, you know, that kind of thing. Carter, of course, had zero. I mean, nada. Again, there's a guy, ego. When the ego is that big, I don't know that you can be funny. Who else did we have? Dukakis? Oh, it could be candidates or presidents. You know, there just haven't been people that, you know, made you laugh. I mean, Steve Forbes, I mean, come on. Quayle, no, I'm sorry. Mondale, no. Gary Hart, no. I'm sorry, not Gary Hart. John Glenn, no. Uh-uh, sorry. Bruce Babbitt? No, I don't think so. Brent, you probably are too young to remember anybody, but I don't remember. So far, Bob Dole's the only one I can think of. John McCain, actually, I have to give him credit, does have kind of a playful, kind of roguish personality, so it does play a little bit. I know we're not electing a comedian to be president, but it would be nice if somebody had a little bit of a wit. On the Democratic side, Ted Kennedy, no sense of humor whatsoever. Chris Dodd actually is funny. Chris Dodd of Connecticut has a good sense, good wit. Again, Irish. Actually, Kerry, who was stiff as a board, if you see him at an after dinner speech, he can actually be pretty good. I saw him at an Imus roast. So far, you know, Bob Dole, Chris Dodd did run for president. Obama, you know, I just don't see the humor there. Again, I think he's a little bit self-absorbed. I think they're all self-absorbed, but I don't see it happening. Hillary, Hillary's attempted to be funny, but no. News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning. Let's go to John.
Hey, Mitch, what about, I can't think of his name right now, but that little guy from Texas, you know?
Ross Perot?
Yeah.
Well, let's look under the hood. Let's, you know, okay, gotcha. That's right. You know, remember they'd catch him in a lie and they'd say, well, sorry, Mr. Perot, but you said the exact opposite. And they'd read it and he goes, oh, well, that's right. Yeah, now I remember.
He wasn't trying to be funny, but he sure
he was funny. Well, how about when the communists were going into his lawn and they were in, and he thought that the Viet Cong were in his lawn or something.
Yeah.
And he goes, did you ever see him? He goes, oh, no, there's a dog, and everybody knows it's true. And he was wacky.
He was wacky, yeah.
But it proves you can be wacky and make billions of dollars.
True. All right, thanks.
Thank you very much. We have time for Mark. News Talk 1310 WIBA. Mark, funniest president or presidential candidate? Good morning, Mark.
I think Morris Udall was way too funny to be president.
He was very witty. He was a funny man, no question about it. We're going back now a few years, 1976.
Yes.
Democratic candidate, lost in the Wisconsin primary narrowly to Jimmy Carter.
The first guy I ever voted for.
He was funny, no question about it. You know, he met a voter or something, and... he said, I hope you beat that congressman that I have, that Udall guy. I hope you beat him. He said, well, I'm Congressman Udall. Nice to meet you. All right, we'll come back, get more nominations. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA.
Get your daily rush weekday mornings after 11. Now more Outside the Box with Mitch Henk on News Talk 1310 WIBA.
Welcome back. John McCain on Letterman last night doing his top 10 list. I thought very funny. Good writers for John. Isn't it nice to have writers? Let's see. Who would be? You know, Hillary's been on a few times. She's tried to mix it up a little bit. Obama. He can try to act like he's hip, can't bowl very well, as we saw the other day in Altoona. But we're looking, because it's important to have wit, sense of humor. We don't always get it with presidential candidates or presidents. I think we have established that in the last, 45 years or so, 48 years, Kennedy and Reagan might have had the best wits, the best sense. Kennedy had a sharp wit. And then we had Reagan could have that playful little twinkle in his eye and, you know, poke fun at Sam Donaldson and do the whole nine yards. But I don't recall Nixon ever having any sense of humor. Clinton, no. I don't see it at all there. Ford actually was a good sport. They made fun of him. You know, he used to fall down and Chevy Chase would make fun of him. And he actually would go on Saturday Night Live. I thought he was pretty good. Let's go to Gene. Gene, this is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Gene.
Yeah.
Hi.
In Manchester's book, Last Lion, they got a Nancy Astor Churchill story
mm-hmm.
where she said they're in an argument, and she says, you, sir, are drunk. Mm-hmm. He says, and you, madam, are ugly, and tomorrow I shall be sober.
Yeah, he had some great ones, no question about it. Churchill, thank you, yeah. Dole would quote Churchill quite a bit. Nothing as exhilarating as to be shot at without result, Churchill. But Nixon, somebody's going to make a case here for Nixon, maybe? Linda, hi. This is News Talk. Is that Linda? WIBA. Good morning.
Yeah.
Good morning, Linda.
Hi. You know, you've mentioned Nixon not having a sense of humor, and you're probably right, but I don't know if you remember, he did make a couple of appearances on Rowan and Martin's.
Sock it to me.
Yeah.
He did say, sock it to me, yes.
Uh-huh. And are you aware that Bob Dole wrote a book about presidential humor?
Yes. In fact, I'd love to get that book.
Because
I saw Dole going around peddling it, yeah.
Yeah, he mentioned Lincoln saying something along the lines of when somebody accused him of being two-faced, he said, if I were two-faced, would I be using this one? So, just thought I'd pass those on.
Well,
you.
Thank you for those examples, but I'm here to tell you, Bob Dole is just hilarious, and it's just too bad that the American people didn't. I mean, I guess when you're in a debate like that, you really just can't do stand-up. You know, I mean, they want them to be kind of serious. 321-1310 outside the Madison area, 877-235 1310. You know, Sergeant Schreiber, who was the running mate of George McGovern, actually was pretty funny, pretty witty. Brad, hi. This is News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Brad.
Morning.
Hi.
Hey, wasn't LBJ kind of known for being a backslapping, guffawing kind of guy?
Well, yeah, he was a backslapper. Funny, though? I don't think so.
Well, he was out there showing his gallbladder scar and whatnot, wasn't he, or something?
Well, he was crude, is what he was.
He's crude, okay.
Yeah, but I wouldn't call him funny, no.
Rude and crude.
Yeah, I would say that for sure. Earthy.
I guess I didn't see him on late night TV anywhere. So
well, Nixon went on the Tonight Show back in the day.
Like Johnson ever was anything like that.
I don't think LBJ wouldn't have done it. No, I wouldn't say funny. No, I wouldn't go for that at all for him.
I guess I never really saw him too much.
Hubert Humphrey again. He was too insecure. He didn't like people making fun of him. You know, Agnew Nixon. No, it doesn't work. Ford actually. At least would do self-deprecating humor. It said, I'm Gerald Ford, and you're not. And he would go on the Tonight Show or Saturday Night Live and do those little 3-second clips. Anyway, not LBJ, no. No, I don't see the humor there. Let's go to Dennis on line two, News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Dennis.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah. Well, why not Lyndon?
Well, what did Lyndon ever do that was funny?
Well, he said that if Hubert ever got elected, he would have a crisis every 10 seconds.
Well, that was kind of mean. He had a mean streak, LBJ. Well, they all do, but...
Well, yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
But it was...
You think that was funny? Yeah, I mean, I remember he would go after Kennedy's old man, bootlegging, you know, and he had kind of a mean streak,
well,
LBJ.
Well, he was, you know... paranoid like Nixon.
Yeah,
they're both bookends.
Oh, thin-skinned, you know, had enemies lists, sure.
Sure, but...
Actually, JFK had kind of a wit because, you know, he was messing around and Hoover had all the files on him for his womanizing.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to kind of, well, he knows that he can't ever use that stuff or he'll be gone, so therefore he won't use any of it. And Kennedy went to West Virginia. Coal miner said, I bet you've never had to work this hard in your life. He goes, you're right, I haven't. I mean, you know, he would come right back at you with stuff like that. And in the press conferences, if people remember those televised press conferences, he was very witty.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted on your show today to get Lyndon some props.
Lyndon some props.
Yeah.
Well, you can give him props on the civil rights legislation.
Well, of course. Well, of course. You know, he has to get something for that.
Yeah. We'll give him props, but not funny. I'm sorry. Let's go next. Well... Okay, excellent point. Let's go to Bill first. News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, Bill. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Mitch. How are you today?
Doing fine. How are you?
Good. Well, remember, Calvin Coolidge back in the 20s was known as Silent Cal because he was a man of very few words.
Mm-hmm.
And as one time a woman acquaintance of his said, Mr. President, I bet I can make you say at least 3 words. And he looked at her and said, you lose.
Yeah, I heard that story. It's a good story.
Yeah?
Yeah, he had a little wit going on. Hey, we've got one here, and I can't believe I've overlooked this one because it's an obvious one. Rich, good morning. News Talk 1310 WIBA. Hello, Rich.
Hi, Mitch. I like Huckabuck.
Yeah, he is funny, and I don't know why. You know, I didn't throw him right out there. Sometimes you have these little mental blocks. But, yeah, he is very, very witty. No question about it.
He was great on Saturday Night Live. Did you see him?
I did see him on Saturday Night Live, yeah.
Where he overstayed his welcome and he wouldn't leave? He thought he had super delegates?
Well, I also thought there was kind of a secret, you know, hardcore politician going on in there, but yeah, under the veneer of the funny man. But he was he is very witty, no question about it. He could play the guitar and, you know, he could. And his appearance on Saturday Night Live was hilarious. Remember, did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
Where they said, you know, they're talking about the superdelegates, and they couldn't vote. You know, they couldn't vote for him or something. And he goes, "What? Really? You know. Oh." He goes, "Uh-oh." You know. Anyway, that was good. He is good. Nice nomination there. K, News Talk 1310 WIBA. Good morning, K.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to nominate both Bill and Hillary Clinton because I think they're the biggest joke ever.
Well, there's the mean-spirited attack.
Well, I understand that.
Yeah.
That you know, I just feel that the way they go about doing things just really does make things funny.
Well, they may rankle you. Well, there is theater. There's no question there's theater, but they're not funny. I know Paul Tsongas, the late Paul Tsongas was funny. He had a great wit. But you don't have it from Bill or Hillary, I'm sorry to say. And what we're seeing increasingly on the stump, you don't have it from Chelsea either. We'll come back. We've got a big show coming up here. Well, it's about balloons, and you're going to, well, sort of. I'll tell you all about it after 10 o'clock. It's News Talk 1310 WIBA.